In this story, Jesus travels to a, let's call it a near Gentile territory. He's in a region where the Jewish community would have been more likely to be influenced by Gentile ways. They're on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, opposite to where Galilee would have been. They're in a region that, if you look back early in Israel's history, would have been a region that would have been one of the tribes, actually maybe two of the tribes, who had decided they wanted some territory on that side, on the east side of the Jordan. And there's kind of a big to-do in the book of Joshua about that. But there would have been, those tribes would have been there. But by this time in Israel's history, that area would have been more an area that would have been sort of a blend of Jewish and Gentile influences. In Mark chapter 5, Mark calls it the Decapolis, or the ten cities. So there would have been a region of various cities near, sort of a cluster of them in that area. A herd of swine would not be totally out of place here. You know, we tend to look at this story and say, what are the swine doing in Israel? Well, wouldn't have been so out of place if this was an area that had a large Gentile influence. Both Luke and Mark describe this healing with great detail and with great drama. There are numerous things, I think, that stand out that make this a very, very exceptional story. Number one, it is exceptional because we see the power of Jesus to command demons. The demons recognize him and fear him. He calls him in this place the Son of the Most High God. No human being has given that testimony yet in the life of Christ, in the ministry of Christ. But a demon does. A demon recognizes who he is. This particular demon begs for mercy. And apparently there are many demons in this man. They call him Legion. It's a group. They don't want to go into what they call here the abyss. It is an abode of darkness and imprisonment. Jesus has the authority to send them there. They don't want to go. In Mark chapter 2, verses 24 and 25, we see Jesus portrayed in quite the same way that he's portrayed here, as having power over the demons, as being the one who can say, you do this, you do that, and they are supposed to and will obey because he has the power to make them obey. Well, this is exceptional for a number of reasons. The biggest reason it's exceptional for us is that, you see, Jesus empowers the warfare that we have to engage in. Only one night prior to this, Jesus had calmed a storm. The previous night, Jesus had calmed a storm in the middle of the sea because they were on their way over there. And it's not till he gets to this place that, you know, the disciples can see his power in a different way. Calming the storm, Jesus exhibits his power over physical forces. Here, we see Jesus' power over spiritual forces. It's a rather powerful comparison or contrast to the night before. The disciples should not have been surprised, and we don't get an indication they were surprised. Other than this was a very dramatic occurrence, they'd just gotten through one dramatic occurrence. As soon as they get to the shore, they have another one confront them. And so they have to perhaps ask the same question they asked in the boat. Who is this that even can calm storms? Well, who is this that can even command demons? This is absolutely exceptional, what Jesus does here. Now, we already know from other passages that Jesus has the authority to forgive sins, which was one of the big questions that a lot of people had about him. Well, how can he say that? What gives him the authority to do that? And Jesus demonstrates in various ways that because he has power over physical things, he also has power over spiritual matters. He has authority over the physical, he has authority over the spiritual, he has authority to forgive sins. Is control over the lives of humanity very far behind? Or at least is his the authority to have that control very far behind. We are the only ones who resist. The demons can't resist. Forgiveness of sins cannot resist. Sins cannot resist. The physical elements do not resist. Humanity resists. We are told well after this, well into the New Testament age, when the churches are founded and Paul writes various letters, that God has exalted Jesus above all rule and powers and authority. Ephesians chapter 1, verses 20 and 21. We see also in the book of Revelation that he is our rider on a white horse. How about that for an image? Revelation chapter 19. The cavalry comes just at the right time, and the cavalry is led by a rider on a white horse. This is who it is. He has the authority. He has the ability to redeem. There is no doubt that he has indeed conquered the forces of evil. Now, there may remain some doubt about whether all forces, all human hearts have given their lives to him, but there's no doubt about his power over evil. This is also exceptional because he enters a region likely to be influenced by Gentiles, but likely for a reason to influence the Gentiles. The Jews did not understand that there would be the gospel to the Gentiles. And this is only one of several times he goes close to Gentile territory. We have seen several Gentiles in the life of Christ demonstrate to him faith. We have the woman from Tyre whose daughter was very ill. We have a centurion whose servant was very ill. And Jesus sees him and says, he's got more faith than anybody I've seen yet. This particular individual becomes a living witness to Christ. It says in verses 38 and 39, he went away proclaiming throughout the whole city how much Jesus had done for him. Now, Jesus knows that the disciples eventually are going to go to all nations. He's going to go to all people, no matter what their economic status, no matter what race they are in, no matter their educational status, no matter where they live. That gospel is going to go to all of them. Some have suggested in this, I think maybe they may be right. This is exceptional here because this sort of foreshadows that mission to the Gentiles. And he does it with flair, doesn't he? When was the last time you read about a mass suicide of a herd of pigs? You ever heard of such a thing? A mass suicide of a herd of pigs. That would probably make news. I don't know how much news or how it would be portrayed. But it's pretty weird, isn't it? For that region, it was pretty dramatic. Imagine the viewpoint of the herdsman if someone were to go and interview them afterwards. You're the herdsman. You're up on the hill. You see the boat come ashore. You see this crazy guy, the demon-possessed man. You know who he is. You see him approach Jesus. And suddenly the pigs rush into the water. You can't hear any of the conversation, but you see the pigs rush into the water. What are you thinking? What just happened here? You know, and you're being interviewed by the local news channel, and they're going, well, you know, what did you see happen? Well, I saw such and such and such and such. Well, what was it about? I don't know. I just saw it happen. It was really wild. All of a sudden, the pigs just, they committed suicide. They killed themselves. They ran into the water. I don't think they had an explanation any more than anybody else did. It certainly would have made the evening news, and reporters would have been all over the scene. You kind of wonder, what would they have asked the man who was healed? See, at the very least, this got a lot of people's attention, didn't it? My guess is it was a pretty interesting dinner conversation around the Decapolis. And well afterwards, as this individual, whom they had known about, was healed. And this brings us to the third reason why this was exceptional. This changed man frightened everyone. I'm not sure if they were more frightened afterwards or before. And that maybe is part of the interesting irony of this story. We know about his condition. Where several things are told about him. Number one, he lived among the tombs. Nobody lives among the tombs. You and I don't live among the tombs. We're a little creeped out, perhaps, when we go walking through a cemetery. He didn't wear any clothes. Verse 27. Well, that would freak a lot of us out as well. Somebody walking around without any clothes on. Mark notes in Mark chapter 5 and verse 4, he seemed to have rather inhuman strength. They bound him with chains. He was able to get out of the chains and the shackles. And what few accounts that I have read about true demon possession, that seems to be the case. They have absolutely inhuman strength beyond what most mortals have. Excuse me. Socially, I get the impression he was sort of consigned to the role of the neighborhood crazy. We knew one or two in our neighborhood. One of the young kid, really, was just, he was retarded. And I don't say that as a bad term. He just wasn't mentally all there. He was harmless, but we knew who he was. Here was a guy that probably every night mothers told their kids, make sure you don't go near the cemetery. They were told to avoid him. My guess is some of the kids probably even made fun of him. I remember we had a man in our neighborhood, and this was a time, this was in the 50s, so it wasn't that long after World War II. There was a guy in the neighborhood that I think at the time he suffered from something they would have at the time called shell shock. Probably something akin to what we say now is post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, the kids avoided his house. You know, we ran by his house when he was there. And we never saw him much. I saw him once. Seemed normal to me. We called him the zombie. You know, which was for kids. I mean, that's just, kids do cruel things. This guy had suffered, you know. And I don't know whatever became of the guy or whether he was being treated or just what, but we knew him. We knew who he was. And, you know, kids are just being kids. But here you had a guy who made a tremendous and dramatic change from what he was. And it says they were afraid. You know, I sometimes think that people have trouble dealing with somebody who's really made a change in their life more than they have trouble dealing with the person the way he is. Because it's so out of the ordinary for a person to change. They saw him, and Luke has this very interesting way of describing him, dressed. Remember, he didn't wear clothes. He was dressed and in his right mind. How could this happen? What power can do this? Would there be demonic reprisals? Were they afraid because of that? How do we relate to a man we've shunned for years and years and years? We don't know what to say to him. Are we sure he's really been changed? They reacted irrationally. It says, and those who had seen it told them how the demon-possessed man had been healed. Then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked him to depart from them, for they were seized with great fear. We're not told the source of the fear, other than what had just happened. Were they afraid of Jesus? Were they afraid of the man? Something made them feel fear, and so they asked Jesus to leave. This was so out of the ordinary for them. And the pigs were gone, and, you know, so many things had happened. And now we're left with this guy. We don't know what to do with him. But in conclusion, I think there's one final thing that is probably the most exceptional thing about this whole story. And it sounds like this is just a natural result of what happened. But think about this. The man proclaimed, it says, how much Jesus had done for him. We don't know if he spent the rest of his life with that. Maybe we can assume that once the gospel was preached, he eventually became a follower of Jesus in that respect. Mark notes that everyone marveled at his discussions, at his telling them how much God had done for them. But what's exceptional about this is not just that he does that, but that he doesn't do something else. He doesn't spend the rest of his life agonizing over the past, or saying how badly he'd been treated, or how he'd been victimized, or how everyone owed him an apology, blah, 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 etc., etc., etc. He doesn't spend his time doing that. He spends his time on the positive part of what God had done for him. Maybe that's what frightened everybody more than anything. They don't know what to do with a person like that. He moves on. He is grateful. God has delivered him. He has a new life. That's what he focuses on. And that's so odd, because we want to just bring all those things in the past forward and live in misery because of those things. Or, you know, we live in an age when everybody has to be the victim and everybody wants to make the responsibility for them on somebody else's back. This man does not do that. And so today, I simply want for us to think about this man in several ways. Number one, stand in awe of him. He was blessed to experience the redemption of Christ in a way that a lot of other people never could. We can rejoice as well that God has given us the same exceptional vision that he had. We have a new life. We have hope. There is redemption. We can rejoice because we have a choice to live a new life and not dwell, stew, or live in the past. And so my encouragement today is to remember the demon-possessed man and how God had blessed him. And like him, let us rejoice in God, for indeed, he has done great things for us. Let's stand and sing now our song of encouragement.